I'm Mark Neff. I'm president and CEO at St. Clair Regional here in Moorhead, and it's my pleasure to welcome each and every one of you. I'm already sensing the energy in the room. I think it's all of our intent to be part of this partnership to increase the quality of life in the region that we live in and work. I'd like to introduce my friend and partner in pursuing increased quality of life in the region, Dr. Wayne Andrews, president of Moorhead State University.
Thank you very much, Mr. Neff, and also welcome on behalf of the faculty, staff, and students at Moorhead State University. It's a great pleasure to be here with you this morning to learn about what we can do to assist in the improvement of healthcare for all those individuals in our region, certainly a top priority. It's my pleasure this morning to have the opportunity to introduce Congressman Hal Rogers. Most of us know Congressman Rogers by his first name. We all call him Hal, and he seems to relate to that pretty well. He's one of us. He's been the 5th District Congressman for 34 years. He's in his 17th term as Congressman. He's the longest-serving Republican ever elected to federal office from Kentucky. If you look back at his resume and you talk with him and the people that have worked with him, four major foci emerge as areas of concern for Congressman Rogers through the years, and I think it's still true today. First is economic development. He's very interested, passionate about trying to help our people in our places have better work, better opportunities for a better life, and that involves a second focus, which is job creation, trying to find through education and through economic development ways to put people to work with meaningful jobs. He has been passionate about stamping out illegal drugs. We know that in our part of the country, we've had a tremendous problem with that, and he's been passionate about it. And then the fourth area of focus has been just the whole uplifting of Appalachia as a region of our country. We're proud Appalachians, those of us that live here, and sometimes the stereotypes that people have about us are absolutely not true and unfounded, and he's worked hard at trying to uplift the values and the cultural norms of our region. Congressman Rogers has served with distinction in some very important roles in the United States Congress. He's currently the chair of the House Appropriations Committee. That committee is responsible for putting together the budget that goes through the General Assembly, the Congress of the United States. It's a very, very important, meaningful, and highly responsible position, and he's done that through really challenging economic times, and we should be appreciative of that. Several years ago in 2003, when the House Homeland Security Committee was established, Congressman Rogers served as chair of that committee for a number of years and was very influential in establishing policies and procedures and practices that have enabled us to be more secure in our country. Congressman Rogers has vision for a lot of things, and some of these phrases will resonate with you. Pride. Pride is the whole issue program that has been about us as Appalachians taking responsibility for our communities, cleaning up our streams and our neighborhoods, and having pride in where we live and what we do. Operation Unite is the focus on stamping out drug abuse, and we know the scourge of OxyContin. And now we're seeing the rise of heroin in our region, and he has been strident in his belief that we've got to have control of these issues through our communities, with our people working together. He helped establish the Southeast Kentucky Economic Development Region, SCED as it's referred to. Tour Southern and Eastern Kentucky was another initiative the congressman established. Most of us have been to Somerset, to the Center for Rural Development, which is a significant place to bring people for programs, for in-service, for collaborative work where we can support the work of the folks in our region. And then most recently, the SOAR initiative, which is shaping our Appalachian region, which is all about us better understanding the multifaceted challenges we face in eastern and southern Kentucky with respect to economic development and job creation. Suffice it to say, Congressman Rogers is a champion of the people. It's one of the things he's passionate about. He believes that we, as people hold the solutions to the problems that we face. And he's been an honest broker to try to create opportunities for conversations that will enable us to address many of these problems. So it's my pleasure this morning to ask you to give a warm Moorhead and Eastern Kentucky welcome to our 5th District Congressman, Hal Rogers.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for the nice, warm Moorhead welcome. Good to be back in town. Good to see all of you. Here on a very important mission that I'm so thrilled that you came out to be a part of. When the governor and I sat down together after we had had these terrible layoffs in the coal fields, which I think has shaken up our community in the hills and got us worried and scared. And he and I decided to call a summit of Eastern Kentucky leadership, whomever wanted to show up, at Pikeville back last December the 11th. I thought we might have 200 or 300 people at best, but then the storms came. It was a blizzardy day. And yet people came from all corners of our area together. And we spent the entire day listening and talking and trying to be imaginative and thinking outside the box about how we can revitalize and invigorate the Eastern Kentucky economy after it had been so beset by the layoffs in the coal fields. Coal is going to be with us for a long time. We're going to be mining coal long after I'm gone. It's vital to the nation and it's vital to our region. It's just not going to produce the numbers of jobs that it once did. That's the reality, and we've got to look at it, lay it on the table, and see what we can do about it. Thus, that summit, we heard ideas all day long, hundreds, thousands, good ideas, people investing themselves into our future. Out of that, I hope, in due course of time, we will digest down to some concrete things that we can actually do. I believe in planning your work and then working your plan. And we're in the process here of planning the work. And I want you to be a vital part of it. When we organized the SOAR campaign then, based on that summit, of which many of you were a part, we now have a corporation, a board of directors. We're in the process of getting the executive director of SOAR, and we've got 10 working groups out there holding sessions like this around the district, hundreds of them, really, many of them on health care. I think we've had around 15 of these sessions around East Kentucky talking about health care. I met Dr. Tom Frieden when he was, as head of the CDC, when we were appropriating the funds for his agency. But then I got to know him a lot better when Unite started having the national summits on prescription drug abuse, the first two in Orlando and then this past April in Atlanta. National summits, around 2,000 of the nation's experts dealing with prescription drug abuse. And Dr. Frieden was a big helper in getting those summits together and performing and participating. And then when he and I were chatting this past April down there in Atlanta at that summit, I began to talk to him about the problems we've got health-wise in East Kentucky. And they're pronounced, and they're ugly, and they're bad. We lead the nation in things like heart disease, lung cancer, diabetes, obesity, and on and on. And he became very interested and excited about the chance to investigate that further. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. I got just the thing for you. Why don't you come and visit us? And this man has taken 3 days of his extremely valuable time, particularly right now. I don't want to say he had nothing else to do, but he came to be with us to help us analyze our problem and try to figure out how we can come about a solution. Thus, these four sessions we've had. We started at Somerset and then over at Hazard and in Johnson County, Paintsville, and then over here. But I hope and trust that out of these sessions, like this one right here, there will gel some ideas about how we together can work to solve these problems. And we have no choice. I want to believe that the seedling that we plant here will result in your kids and grandkids living a better, more peaceful, more healthful life. But the truth is, ladies and gentlemen, the seedling we're planting may not yield the tree that you and I will be able to rest under its shade. This is a long-term project. We all know that. As much as I would love to see us solve it tomorrow, I'm realistic enough to know that this has been around a long time and it's developed over a period of time, and we're going to have to fight hard to help make a dent in the problem. But it's worth the fight. And I think we can make some good things happen, and that's what this is all about. Churchill said the pessimist sees difficulty in every opportunity. He said, but the optimist sees opportunity in every difficulty. Heavens knows we've got the difficulties. So I think we can make a difference, because I know that you, like me, were optimists. SOAR is a jobs-driven program that wants to make big-time changes in the way we do business. I want us all to think outside the box. That's what SOAR is all about. Think about new thoughts, things we've never dared dream of. I think we can do some things. Eastern Kentuckians have never been wont for being courageous and to be daring and bold. One bold idea coming out of SOAR is to extend broad-based, high-capacity, high-speed cable to all of Eastern Kentucky. We've got the best workforce in America. I hear that from contractors that have plants here and elsewhere in the nation. They say we don't have anywhere near the work ethic there that we have here. Hardworking, reliable, talented workforce. Low wage. We're low cost. The only thing we've lacked is good access to the world markets. And anymore, it's not trucks or trains or planes that brings your raw material. It comes to you through the air or through the cable. You process the data in some fashion and you ship it out, not by truck, train, or plane. Same way, through the air. No smokestacks, no highways. You don't need those things. The new interstate highway of our age is the cable. It will bring untold opportunities for us if we take advantage of it. That's where we all come in. Those things like the cable and the SOAR campaign on tourism promotion, my gosh, we're unique. There's nothing in the world like Eastern Kentucky music. This is where it came from. We don't take advantage of that. They move off to Nashville, make their fortune there. God bless them. But I'm interested in helping sell Eastern Kentucky for the uniqueness that we have here. For example, in tourism, agriculture. There's 10 different disciplines that SOAR is working in with working groups like you here. And some of you are on some of those working groups. But this one about health care is to me the most important. We cannot, whatever else we do, whatever job we do, whatever family we have, whatever great opportunities come to us in the future, if you're not healthy, it's meaningless. And so the quality of life is the major thing about SOAR. This week, we've been trying to focus on things that we can do and programs that we can adopt and involve agencies like the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. I like to emphasize that last part of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention to help make us get in the groove. At the federal level, we've appropriated billions to address health care issues around the country, including the Preventative Health and Health Services Block Grant, advanced molecular detection to stop deadly infectious disease outbreaks, fundings to promote nutrition, physical activity, obesity awareness, support for the National Diabetes Prevention Program, funding to address prescription drug abuse. People around the state and country continue to suffer. But our region has been hit the worst. We, according to the Kentucky Department for Public Health, the prevalence of heart disease here is 84% higher than the U.S. average. Diabetes, 47% higher. Obesity, 26% higher. The highest mortality rate for lung cancer, 67% above the national average. So that's why we're here, to share across county lines, looking at our region as a region, not as counties or towns, and try to find ways to bring together our whole region around some common goals. We need to encourage the use of tools that we have already available. Non-invasive screening tests that can save lives, like the FIT colorectal at-home screening test that boasts an 87% sensitivity rate for colon cancer. And so I want to encourage you to be a part of this. We're just now trying to put together the goals and the way to get there. But when we do, I want you in that army. So I guess I'm going to name this session, we've got a lot of good ideas, we just can't think of them. But we're here to think of them with you today. And so I want you to enjoy today's program. Somebody said one time, a great leader's courage to fulfill his vision comes from passion, not position. So regardless of your station in life, your passion for this cause is what's important, not your position. And so I'm looking for people of all walks of life. You know, with the Unite campaign and the Pride campaign and the others that I've been a part of, they got started and were successful, still are, because they addressed a common problem that we all have. It was not a regional thing. It wasn't just Pike County. It wasn't just Pulaski County. It was the whole territory. We suffered from first that blight of bad water and trash and litter and dumps and the like that made us all sick to look at, not much less to walk in. But we all came together because it was a common problem. We all suffered from it, and we decided that we could do something about it if we pulled together as a region. And we're all proud of East Kentucky. There's no more prideful people than East Kentuckians. And once we had our pride on the line, boy, you went to work. I've never seen anything like this. You don't find trash and litter and dumps. You can't find them anymore. We've looked and searched. We've got rid of 4,000 dumps. You've picked up 1 million tires, 167,000 old refrigerators and things thrown over the bluffs. You've done a marvelous thing. And you pitched in to a common cause. You knew that we were doing the same thing in Knott County and Whitley and Bell and so on, and you all pitched in. Same thing with the drug campaign, Unite. Common problem. We all had kids dying in our hospitals from overdoses of OxyContin and the like. Still do, but it's going down now. We're beginning to win that fight. But we were successful with it because we all pitched in together, had a common problem, and we addressed it with our energies and our ideas, wading the mud to get there. But you made it happen. Now we suffer from this extremely common problem that we all have. Whether you're from Knox County or Bell or what have you, you still have people prematurely dying of these bad disease pieces that we have. And so it behooves us all, again, to pull together to help fight this common enemy. It's wonderful to see you out here. We've got, I think, a great program that we want you to participate in. And I want to thank Morehead State University. Dr. Andrews, thank you so much for being our host. A great university, one of the stars of the country. Thank you so much for being here. God bless. I was riding in the car between Somerset and Hazard, and on the radio, on the news, they were talking about the problem with Ebola, and they interviewed former New York City Mayor Bloomberg, and he was going on and on about his former commissioner of public health when he was mayor of New York City. A young man, he said, by the name of Tom Frieden, who we now know is the head of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. And I got to know the doctor as we were appropriating funds for the center. And then later, as we began to have these national summits on prescription drug abuse that Unite put together in Orlando, Florida, with 2,000 of the nation's experts on prescription pill abuse, the summit in the country. He was right in the middle of helping us put that together because the CDC had declared that prescription drug abuse and overuse was a national calamity, and that really spurred the interest in what we were doing. But he has been on the panels there every time we've had one of these summits. We've had three now, the last one in April in Atlanta, where he was one of the stars of that show as well. During those times that we were talking mainly about the prescription drug abuse and what a time we've had with that here, we also began to talk about these horrible numbers we have on all of these diseases and what may cause that and what can help it and how can we cure it. And he became very, very interested in our region. And he's delved into all sorts of numbers. And it's fascinating what he has learned about us and maybe how we can dig into this problem. But to take the time and focus his mind on our problem in the middle of these earth-shaking things that he's having to deal with around the world is a testament to the compassion, if you will, of this doctor. So I ask him to come and make a house call and diagnosis. I want you to give a great, warm Kentucky welcome to Dr. Tom Frieden, head of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention.
Thank you all so very much. It has been just wonderful to be able to spend the time with you, to learn from you, and to be able to get a bit of a sense of the progress these communities have made in the 30 years since I was last here. Yes, there are huge challenges, but you have enormous resources. You have people, you have organizations, and you have leaders like Hal Rogers, who is truly visionary. He is thinking not just about today and tomorrow and next year. He's thinking about the next generation. He's thinking about our kids. He's thinking about what we could be as a community and as a society. He's been the number one leader in the country sounding the alarm on the prescription opiate overdose abuse problem. And he goes way beyond just shining a light on a problem. He says, once we know the problem, make the plan, work the plan. And that's what we're doing with prescription opiate overdose. But I wanted to maybe start with something that you may have seen something on in the news. This is viral hemorrhagic fever that, you know, sometimes people might have heard about. We don't get much attention except when Dustin Hoffman makes a movie about it. And we actually have other viral hemorrhagic fevers that don't have movies made about them that we've had in the U.S. and didn't cause this kind of attention. And they're just as deadly as Ebola, and nobody ever got infected from them. But bottom line is, it's a deadly disease. Terrible disease, and we know how to stop it. And we're surging our response in Africa now to stop it. But I was thinking about fear, because fear can be helpful or it can be harmful. And it's harmful if it leads to irrational actions. It's harmful if it leads us to do things that are mean or unfair to other people. But fear is actually a healthy emotion. If you're facing something deadly, it's normal to be afraid. It's healthy to be afraid. It's adaptive to be afraid. So I was thinking of, what are the four ways that fear could be helpful in the Ebola situation? Well, one is for the handful of healthcare workers at Emory University Hospital who are taking care of these two patients, they should be afraid, and they should use that fear to make sure that they do absolutely everything that we recommend on infection control, because if you do, you won't get infected. But it means being really meticulous. Ebola doesn't spread easily. It doesn't spread from somebody who's not sick with it. And it doesn't spread through casual contact, talking to somebody. But it does spread from people who are very sick in the hospital. So making sure that they are strictly following infection control, that's a useful way to channel fear. Second, around the country, you know, all this attention has been, why did you bring these people back? Well, first off, it wasn't us. It was the organization that brought them back, and they're Americans. They have a right to return. What our responsibility is to make sure that when they come back, they don't infect anyone else, and that's what we're doing. But actually, if you wanted to be afraid, the bigger fear is we have a lot of travelers who visit these countries, including in these counties. We talked to a doctor yesterday who knew of someone who had just come back from West Africa with fever. Turned out he didn't have Ebola, but, you know, we are all connected by the air we breathe, water we drink, food we eat, the airplanes we ride on. We can't hermetically seal the U.S., so doctors, healthcare workers working on the front lines need to know if people have traveled in the last 21 days to one of these three countries. That's a useful use of fear, to be more alert. Third, I really hope that our fear does not outweigh our compassion, because compassion is very important. And these are two individuals who were there helping out. They got sick. They seem to be getting better now. Whether that has anything to do with the experimental treatment they received, we have no idea, but we're happy that they seem to be getting better, and we hope they continue to. But also, that fear, I think, should lead us to action. We can do more to prevent things like this from happening in the future. There's an initiative that's our top initiative going forward called Global Health Security. A few years ago, the U.S. ambassador to Africa said to me, CDC is the 911 for the world. And I thought, that's great. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, I actually want every country to have its own public health 911. And so that's what global health security is about. It's helping other countries better find, stop, and prevent health threats. Because if they do that, it's good for them and it's good for us. That's the safest, most effective, best way, cheapest way, most cost-effective way to protect Americans, and it also helps us globally. I have a dear friend, Tony Harries. He worked in Malawi for more than 25 years. He worked there from before the HIV epidemic. He saw it come in, and I asked him, Tony, what was it like there? He said, it was just, you can't imagine. It was the only business in town that was surviving was the funeral business. There was a loss of hope. Doctors and nurses were dying, and it was like just night fell. And then treatment came in, and there was hope again. And we have a chance, really, to reverse the epidemic. The countries that have done the best here have dropped their infections by 60, 70, 80, 90%. And it's not just been HIV, it's been tuberculosis also. I worked on tuberculosis in India. We were able to prevent 3 million deaths through the program there. So I just wanted to start with a little bit about what our country is doing overseas, because I think every one of us, every one of you should be proud of that and make us even prouder to be an American. We think about scale and impact in public health. How can we make the biggest difference? And we do that by doing things that have impact. Now, this is new, right? So oral health, we know there are big problems here in Kentucky. There's a much higher rate of loss of all teeth, 25% of adults. There's a much higher rate of loss of more than 6 teeth, and a much lower rate of having all your teeth. So there are big problems here, but we know we can start and make real progress in kids. And there are very effective programs like the Varnish program, like the dental sealant program. We had an analysis of that. It is highly effective. You can do it in schools. We have to address scope of practice issues, and that's a state issue. You decide. It's up to you. But if you address scope of practice issues in dental care and other areas, you will do at least 4 things. One, you will get more access, because people who would not be able to get to the doctor or dentist can get services. 2, you will reduce costs, because the pay of people who at that level is lower than doctor and dental pay, so you increase access and you decrease costs. 3, you will, I believe, increase quality, because ultimately you can follow protocols. They're all working under the direction of a dentist, but you can increase quality. And 4, most importantly, you can improve health. So this is an important area, and sealants are one example of the kind of things. And we have resources at CDC on to provide support for dental sealant programs. We looked at this particular district, and we looked at premature deaths, deaths that didn't have to happen if this district had had a death rate like the rest, like the best in the country. And they're substantial. It's nearly 900 deaths a year from heart disease, 800 deaths a year from cancer, 400 deaths a year from lung disease, 100 from stroke, and 500 from injuries, including a rate of prescription overdose that's way higher than we'd like. Now, 32 years ago, I worked for a community health center in West Tennessee. I spent some time here and most of my time there, and I did a community survey. And I went out to the community, and I asked a whole host of questions from 500 randomly selected households, and I then analyzed that data with an adding machine, and I found things that were shocking. Now, this was a small community. Total population was 10,000. Clinic was beautiful, beautiful new clinic, and it was underutilized. So the question was, why was it underutilized? Well, first we found that of this random sample of the 10,000 people in the community, only 50% knew that it existed. Only 20% knew it had a sliding fee scale, so if they didn't have resources, they would be able to pay a lot less. And virtually no one knew that it had a van that could pick them up if need be. And the people who knew those things were the people who didn't need to know them, because they were more socially mobile, they had more awareness, so there's kind of an inverse care law. People who need care the most get it the least, and vice versa. That was my first introduction to public health and to community health. And it really taught me that there are huge gaps in communication. Communication is never as good as you think it is. If you think it's good, it's fair. If you think it's fair, it's poor. If you think it's poor, it's probably not there at all. But there's so much we need to do to improve communication. And a lot of what we can do is empower patients. So, for example, one doctor had an idea to ask patients, if you've got diabetes and you're in the waiting room waiting, take your shoes off. That will remind me to check your feet for complications. That might prevent an amputation in the future. I thought that was a great idea, and I've been thinking how we could do that to help promote colon cancer screening. Well, we know that heart disease and stroke rates are very high in eastern Kentucky in particular. And what's even more concerning is that the disparity, the difference between the U.S. and Kentucky has actually been increasing. Kentucky 5 has actually been increasing. So while Kentucky 5 has gotten a little better, the U.S. has gotten more better. As a result, in 1999, the rate was 30% higher here. Today, or 2011, it's 54% higher. So the difference was too big in the first place, and it's getting bigger. And that's something that we really have to reverse. Heart disease is the leading preventable cause of death in this country, and we know what to do about it. we can prevent most heart disease and stroke with tools that are available and inexpensive today. And interestingly, about half of the improvement in heart disease and stroke comes from clinical interventions and about half from risk factor reductions. We launched the Million Hearts campaign to prevent a million heart attacks and strokes over a five-year period. And the basic concept is help people be healthier in the community so they don't need as much treatment through tobacco control and sodium reduction and trans fat elimination, and improve treatment by focusing on aspirin, blood pressure, and cholesterol, smoking cessation, and have clinical innovations like the use of patient navigators in the program we announced for cancer, but also for heart disease. Pharmacists are going to be involved, office managers, family members, churches, senior centers. We can involve the strengths of the community to help do something as straightforward as making sure that people's blood pressure is under control, because that's going to reduce heart attacks and strokes. What could save the most lives in healthcare? Well, turns out it's the ABCs, giving aspirin to people who need it, blood pressure control, cholesterol control, and smoking cessation. Blood pressure control is the single most effective. We could prevent tens of thousands of deaths a year just by simply getting people on the right medicines. And we unfortunately aren't doing that. Right now, we're only at 52% control of blood pressure. But we've looked around the country. Part of what we do is not come up with something in an ivory tower. We look around and we learn from communities what works in different places. Then we draw those lessons together and share them among different communities. And one thing is consistency, checklists and protocols, very important to standardize care. You can depart from it if you want, but if you standardize it, you get better systems. Information systems, that patient-friendly medical home as an old country doctor with a computer, absolutely. This information system can allow us to find out who are all of our patients with high blood pressure, what proportion of them are under control, what proportion not under control are on the right medicines, and then send a note out to them or call them, bring them back. It can be a powerful tool. Patient-centered, don't make patients come back more than they have to. Make sure we know what the costs they're having, find the barriers to their treatment, and then address those barriers. Team-based care, we talked about already, and innovation, figuring out new things. We've been thinking about the best providers in the U.S., looking at them and recognizing them, and one of the things they think about is, what's the real number? I might think that I'm doing fine with my patients, but maybe most of them have left, and they're not currently getting care. So we need to make sure that we're handling all of the patients in the community, not just the ones who come through our doors. We went to Minnesota. Minnesota started where the rest of the U.S. was in 1996. Within 12 years, they had outpaced the rest of the U.S. dramatically. They did that by getting people together, employers, insurers, people who are paying for health care, people receiving it, doctors, to improve blood pressure control. I was struck by this data. We went there and looked for about a week. I can't tell you exactly what did it, but they got people working together, and they got people thinking about control of blood pressure. They set ambitious goals, and they achieved them. And that as a result, their number of heart attacks and strokes plummeted. We, in the Million Hearts program, have had many successes. Rural areas in Kansas and Wisconsin have made tremendous progress. So it's possible anywhere. And reducing blood pressure can be not just medications, but walking, being physically active, improving diet, reducing sodium, healthy weight, and limiting alcohol to moderate consumption. Very simple rule there, never more than four. If you just kept with that, you'd eliminate many of the harms from alcohol use, four drinks at a sitting. I said that once, and a reporter asked me, does that mean I can have four at this bar and go next door and have four at the next bar? She wasn't kidding, actually. She was asking. I do want to talk about tobacco. Tobacco damages virtually every part of the body, and it causes chronic, not only cancer, but chronic diseases like stroke and many other problems, a very serious problem. And it's not only the smoking, but it's also secondhand smoke, which has many harms for children and for adults, ranging from cancer to stroke, heart attack, asthma, and other problems. Now, we have a strategy that works for tobacco control, and I'll just go through it. It's called Empower. And Mike Bloomberg helped to develop this globally. The concept is monitor tobacco use and prevention policies. Protect people from tobacco smoke through smoke-free air laws. And I'll talk about that more in a minute. Offer help for smokers to want to quit. Most smokers want to quit. Warn about the dangers of tobacco. We've run the Tips from Former Smokers campaign, and that has saved a lot of money and a lot of lives. Enforce bans on tobacco advertising and sponsorship. And raise taxes on tobacco, the single most effective thing that reduces tobacco use. Now, when we made New York City smoke-free, it was tough, let me tell you. That was 2002. It was in the middle of a very bad financial crisis. There were tax increases and layoffs and service cuts, and it was a very, very difficult experience. But you know, the one thing that no one could argue with was the waitress who came forward, and there was a panel, and it was a four-person panel to present to city council, and unprecedented, the mayor testified on that panel, which he never does, but he said, I'm gonna do it, he wanted to do it, so Mike Bloomberg came and testified, I testified. Harold Varmus, who is the head of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and was previously the head of the National Institutes of Health, was the third testifier, and the fourth was a young woman who was working in a restaurant where they allowed smoking and who was pregnant. And she said, this is the only job I can get, and my baby is gonna be damaged from this smoke, and there's nothing I can do about it. We wouldn't say about a mine that let people get exposed to asbestos, that's okay, they can make a choice to work there or somewhere else. We would say, we have a responsibility to make every workplace safe. Now, when we implemented this, we implemented the tax, and tobacco use went down after being stable for 10 years. We went smoke-free, it went down further, and it didn't go down further. It stalled, and we had to make more progress, so we ran hard-hitting ads, like the TIPS ads that we're running nationally, and the result of that was a dramatic reduction in smoking, about 25% in adults and about 50% in kids. The teen smoking rate went down to 7%, single digit there, and that's the next generation. That's lives saved. It's a lot easier not to start than it is to quit. But if you just try to focus on kids, you will not have the impact. Kids follow what adults do, not what adults tell kids to do. And the result of this was a dramatic change in life expectancy. New Yorkers lived about a year longer. By the end of Mike Bloomberg's term, it was more than 2 years longer. So basically gave 8 million New Yorkers an extra year of life. That's a tremendous gift. And that was more than anything else through the tobacco program. And before I leave smoking, I want to tell you one story about India. I worked in India for 5 years. It was the hardest I have ever worked. I worked as hard as I can work. Someone else may be able to work harder, but it was as hard as I could work. Basically, almost every working hour, I traveled 3 weeks out of four. I went to about 250 of the 600 districts in India. I went to several thousand towns. I helped the country set up the TV program, and they've saved 3 million lives through that program. But there was something else I did that was probably at least as important. I had a counterpart there, Dr. Gulshan Khatri, wonderful, wonderful physician, one of the best health leaders of India. And he smoked three packs a day when I started working with him. And I had to share a very small office space with him for about 12 or 14 hours a day for any day that I was in Delhi. And it took me about 2 years, but I finally got him to quit. And I got him to quit because I thought about it hard. And they have a caste system in India still, it's pretty strong, and he's warrior caste, he's a tough guy. And I said to him finally over dinner with his family, I said, Dr. Khatri, do you mean to tell me that cigarettes are tougher than you are? And that got to him, and he quit. And because he quit, he was able to go on and run that program. I couldn't run that program. He had to run that program and to do many other things that are saving a lot of lives in public health because of his life. So I hope I can get everyone who's smoking and wants to quit because we need you. We need you to be around for the long haul. We need your leadership. Now, we know that there's too much obesity in Kentucky, and that leads to diabetes with it, and we know that there are huge costs of obesity and diabetes. In fact, a single patient with obesity costs about $1,400 more per year. A smoker costs about $2,500 more per year, and someone with diabetes costs about $8,000 more per year. So if we can prevent these things, we can be paying for health rather than paying for sickness. It's striking that most of these things are common sense and non-controversial. I've been thinking about Hal Rogers' question to me, what are some of the things that people can do in their own life to be healthier, like walk regularly, 30-minute brisk walk once a day, tremendous difference in your health, even if you don't lose an ounce. It can be 3 10-minute walks a day. Finding things you enjoy doing more of them. And Chairman Rogers was thinking about the large portions, what can we do about that? And I was thinking about that overnight. And you know, one thing you want to do is kind of crowd out the unhealthy stuff. In fact, my father, who was a doctor, had a sweet tooth, just as I have a sweet tooth. And, you know, we will basically eat as much dessert as put on the table in front of us. I could eat a whole pie. And my father said once, you know, the only solution is to fill up on fruit. That way you just don't have space for all the dessert. So the more you have healthy stuff that you like, water. If you have to have a soda, have a diet soda. Fruit and vegetables. The more you crowd out the other things. The problem is it's hard for us to get those things, and so we want to make it easier for people to get healthier things. And these are some core interventions to reduce obesity. I just wanted to give you one example of the return on investment of public health. These are childhood vaccines. We spend a lot of money on vaccines. CDC provides about half of all the childhood vaccines in the country through a program that Congress designed called the Vaccines for Children program. That program has been around for exactly 20 years, and it's been a remarkable success, saving really trillions of dollars, literally. But for each year that we run this program, we save about $3 for every $1 we spend in the healthcare sector, and about $10 societally for every dollar we spend. These are the benefits of physical activity, which are quite substantial. Improves everything you'd like to improve and reduces everything you'd like to reduce. Hernando, Mississippi, named the healthiest hometown in Mississippi. They made some simple changes. They went smoke-free, but they also had walking trails and better school food. They improved policies in workplaces, and they had a farmer's market to support local agriculture. All those things together helped them win an award from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation, got them a lot of good press, got them a new track that the community all used, and the mayor told me the next year, because of that, a new industry moved to their town. For the first time in 40 years, they had a new industry. So health can promote economic development, and lack of health can undermine it. Unintentional injury is still a major problem, and it's a particular problem because it affects young people and families so much. Prescription opiates have been an issue that really Chairman Rogers sounded the alarm on. They're so important to reduce this. And motor vehicle crashes are still way too high here. What we've seen is a big increase in prescriptions, and right parallel to that, a big increase in deaths and in treatment for prescription opiates. These are dangerous medicines. I think we lost sight of that. They're dangerous for two reasons. One is they're highly addictive. The second is if you take a little too much, you can die. And so what we've tried to do is to begin work on efforts to inform people more about them. So I'm delighted to be able to say, Chairman Rogers kind of pushed me last time we saw each other, can you do something on public education? So I haven't had a chance to tell him this yet, but we work together with other parts of the Department of Health and Human Services, and we will be spending about $600,000 in the next few months to develop a set of ads, one designed for the public and one designed for healthcare workers. And we will plan to run those ads next year, sometime in 2015, once we've made sure they're effective. What I think might work is not the same as when you study it and figure out what works. So we have to make sure those ads are rigorously documented. Maybe the message would be something like that sometimes the treatment becomes the problem, just to emphasize that risk-benefit ratio and really emphasize that these are dangerous drugs, and for doctors to really correct some of the misconceptions about prescription opiates and how risky they are. So thank you, Chairman Rogers, for your leadership in this area, and we will follow your lead to try to reverse this epidemic. So I would just mention that car crashes remain a big problem, including here in Kentucky 5. They're almost three times higher than the national average. We've talked about prescription opiates. I don't need to discuss them more. We know that the heroin problem is coming, and the heroin problem is largely associated with the prescription opiate problem. Three quarters of heroin users started with prescription opiates. We know that we have to address both patients and doctors, and we know we can reverse it by innovation and tracking and focusing and supporting states, and that's why we awarded Kentucky a prevention boost award of $1 million over 3 years to accelerate progress reducing prescription opiate overdose. As prescriptions go up, deaths go up. As prescriptions go down, deaths go down. Kentucky has made similar progress reducing prescriptions in just 1 year with concerted state action, and I'm confident that they will make more progress in the years to come. Most importantly, let me just say that I'm even more impressed by the commitment, by the creativity, and by the leadership that you have. You're fortunate in that. Every community has challenges. Every community has strengths. The real challenge is to take those strengths and apply them strategically to address those challenges. And I'm confident that you'll do that, and we're here to help any way we can. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for all your work. And I want to especially thank Morehead State University and St. Clair Regional Medical Center for hosting us today. Thank you so much for the great work that you do. And I can't thank Dr. Frieden enough. This is a busy man. He's got a lot on his shoulder. And at this particular moment, it just so happened that when we planned this thing, of course, Ebola was not even in the news. And then as we began to get close to putting in this tour on, is when that problem began to develop. And in spite of those demands, he has been with us. And Dr. Frieden, I can't thank you enough for your dedication to your cause. This is a big idea that we have. SOAR is a big idea. It's to think outside the box and change things, bring about change for the better, and provide a better way of life for our people and better jobs for our people. And it's a big idea. But I'm reminded the only thing more powerful than a big idea is the team that's able to see it through. Now, SOAR's a big idea. It won't happen unless the team makes it happen. Now, we can be negative or we can be positive. We can look at the bright side, we can look at the dark side. We know our dark side. That's what we're fighting. But I want you to keep your eye on the bright side. We can complain because rose bushes have thorns, or we can rejoice because thorn bushes have roses. That's what our President Lincoln once said. Well, folks, I see rose bushes. And I want you to be a part of the trip. This is going to be exciting. It's going to be demanding of all of us. It's going to take our passion. It's going to take everything we have to make this happen. God bless you.